everybody, to the Be Better podcast. We are in the dead of winter here in Minnesota, but we are reaching out today to a friend of ours who is in the opposite of winter. They're in the summer. It is a person that I have known for, I would say, quite a long time. It could be up to 10 years now, which could be scary. She is a renowned triathlete and nutritionalist. You've probably seen her in magazines. You've read articles that she's written. You may even read her book before. But I'd like to welcome you to my friend, Pip Taylor. Pip, welcome to the podcast today.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on. And I think you're right. I think it's well over 10 years.
Isn't that crazy?
It actually is frightening. Oh. I get frightened when I think about when I first started the sport. And it is quite frightening because I don't feel that old.
No. So. You're not that old. I don't feel like I'm that old. But but we met each other back when I worked for Optum. And we had the performance center, and you came, and you were at our grand opening. I remember we went out to lunch at D'Amico's in Edina. Like, I feel like you were a hometown person.
I feel like I am too. It's funny, you know. I haven't even been back to the US for a number of years now since I've had kids, but I still feel really closely tied to there. You know, I view all the years that I spent in the States very fondly.
Well, and you've raced here. I remember watching you race at the Lifetime Fitness Triathlon back when it was like, you know, the big pro race when they had the $1 million prize purse.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Yep.
And that was always a fun race. So to let everybody know, where are we calling you at today?
So I'm at home in Lennox Head, which is New South Wales. We are right on the beach, and we are in summer, but right now we're having crazy weather. We've actually had a lot of crazy weather here, but we're now in torrential rain. There's a lot of flooding around. It's still very hot and humid, but a lot of rain.
All right. Is that how close to you, did the fires come? Has that affected you? In your area, or is the how close are you there?
Yeah, not the fires weren't directly in our area. We were certainly affected by some smoke for a short period of time, but not directly in this area. Which, you know, thankfully they were unbelievable. The devastation that's been up and down a lot of the country.
It's been hard to watch on this side because of just seeing the damage not only to the countryside, the indigenous people, the animals, the flora, and now, like, you know, is it raining now in those areas or is it still super dry?
It is. It's raining in most of the areas now. So, and you know, some of the poor towns and poor people are now experiencing floods. So where they've been, burnt out. There are even places now being evacuated with flooding and rain. So it's been a really tough few months for a lot of people. So certainly where we are, we can't really complain. And the rain has been really welcome. We've been in drought for many years, but it certainly seems to be one extreme to the other.
Yeah, well, we're thinking about you
here.
Which
is a bit frightening as well. Yeah, no, thank you.
If you ever want to evacuate and come to a very cold, very super dry climate, that's that would be my outside right now. And
yeah, tempting.
Although the beach sounds very tempting to me right now, so it would be nice. Pip, a little bit of background about you is that you have a master's in nutrition and dietitian. You have a postgraduate degree in sports nutrition, and you have a bachelor's science degree in human life sciences. So you are one of the people that I think is very well versed in nutrition, not only for individuals but for athletes. And that's kind of been your life post sports. Is that correct?
Yeah. And to be honest, I started that while I was racing as well. I'm someone probably like you, Chris, that doesn't sit around very well. I like to keep busy, not just physically, but also mentally. I don't do well with with holidays or breaks so much. So it was always – it was important to me while I was racing that I was also studying and also doing some work, which is when I started writing magazines and books and also working with some athletes while I was still an athlete myself. And that's – you know, that's primarily what I do now is work with athletes. I work with one of the major – football teams here. That's Aussie football, AFL.
Not American, not to be confused with American football.
That's right. No, very, very different. and it's, you know, it's something that I love. And I think that the nutrition knowledge, but also the athlete knowledge and having grown up in the world of sport really stands you in good stead when you're talking about performance and those understanding, I guess, what's on an athlete's plate day to day, quite literally and figuratively.
Absolutely.
And what goes into performance.
Well, you bring a lot of like street cred to that because of, you know, I would say your ability to perform at a high level for so long, your incredible fitness. And so that's great that translates across and it's amazing how, you know, people think of like just endurance sports, but how like stick and ball sports, it translates to the same, correct?
Yeah, it does. You know, I mean, there's I guess the baselines for every sport, for every performance, it doesn't even have to be a sports performance, but performance in any arena, there are some basics that translate across the board. You know, you've got to be in good physical shape. You've got to be in good mental shape. And the differences between sport or even if you're a CEO of a company, it's still performance. But if you're talking purely sports, you know, there's then small differences in how you are really optimizing those differences for strength, for power, endurance, speed. And it's also talking the language. You've got to talk the language of an athlete if you're working with an athlete. And those differences don't change too much.
Yeah, I'm sure they recognize that you have come from a place where they want to be, and so then it's a little bit easier for them to listen and take the information that you have given them and be able to apply it without question.
Yeah, look, to be honest, it really helps. It really helps having that background. You know, you see a lot of people that want to work in sports. They see sports as I don't know, they're almost viewing it from the outside as the peak of where they want to go professionally, but it can be a tough world, and if you don't understand that world and athletes are fickle. I know too, as an athlete myself, if I was ever working with someone or introduced to someone, that you can see through them quite quickly. You think, do they know what they're talking about or not? It doesn't mean that they have to have performed at a really high level as an athlete to gain your trust, but you've got to have some sort of credibility and know that you're talking about that goes beyond a textbook or goes beyond having that university qualification. And that's something that I see all the time certainly in my industry. There are people with really, really good knowledge. But there's a gap between having the knowledge and being able to apply it.
Yeah. I would say your ability to articulate it as well has been something that I've watched, not only from small groups, but, you know, larger presentations, both verbally and in written form, that you're able to articulate your knowledge and translate it to a point where everybody can grab a little nugget out of it. It's not you're not talking above everybody's head, you know, you're not kind of baselining it, but you really are able to put it out there that it's consumable to every person.
I genuinely appreciate that because, you know, it's something that I think is important. I think relationships, it's building relationships and building trust, and then educating. So I see my role as much as it is about food and nutrition and performance, is about educating, and in some ways you're almost a counsellor as well. You act as a counsellor. And often too, it's not about telling people what to do. It's about building off what they already know. It's about bouncing ideas around, particularly once you get to a certain age or a certain level of athlete. They already have their plans, and some of them are pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So it becomes much a sounding board and just bouncing ideas around. You know, I never pretend that I have all the answers. I think as soon as you start to think that you do have all the answers is when you run into trouble. I'd like to think I'd be pretty quick to either say, I don't know, let me see if I can find out, let's speak to someone who knows more than me. There's a lot of trial and error, because there's a lot of individuality that comes into it. So there's a lot of, well, let's just try that and see.
Absolutely.
For the best.
And that's one of the things I like to point out to newer endurance athletes, especially as they start to explore longer distances, is the exploration of how their bodies work and what works for them and what doesn't. And I think that's, you know, all too often people think about, okay, I want to record this many miles, or I want to go this fast. But it's more about, okay, how do I find out what works? What's the best fuel? How's my body reacting the most efficiently to that? And where's the balance? And that's not something that looks great in a training plan. That's not something that looks great on Training Peaks. It doesn't probably translate well to social media. But it is one of those things that it's definitely a make or break point, because I think, and you've probably heard this before too, there's nothing more frustrating than going to like a pro Q&A board and somebody wants to know, oh, so what do you eat during a race?
Yes. Because
that's what they want to do. Like, oh, and every time I hear somebody say that, I always think back to a interview that Dave Scott gave like way back in the day when he first started like just killing Ironman. And he said that his secret ingredient to winning at Kona was figs, and that he ate as many figs as possible on the bike and on the run. And we're like, everybody's like, "Roll figs, yes." And he said, you know what? It was the most enjoyable times he's ever had, watching people throw up and puke and just like just get destroyed, because he's like, that's what he's like, why would you do that? Like, figs are good, but like, don't just do what I do.
I think that's across the board. You see that in training as well. And to be honest, I mean, I've been guilty of that as well. Not so much copying other people, but feeling as though you have to stick to a rigid plan, rather than being able to tune in to your body, listen to your body, and find out what's working for you. In some respects, I think it's almost an advantage of endurance sports, because you can and do excel at an older age. And with age, you do get a bit of not just wisdom, but I think a bit more insight into yourself and insight into your body, and probably a little bit more confidence in being able to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that you can really use to your advantage.
Well, you know, speaking of listening, we have a lot of people that listen to us are, you know, regular folks, full-time parents, moms especially. And you've got a very unique, I would say, insight on this, because being a mother yourself, you have experienced what it's like to be an athlete before and what it's like to be, you know, in that space after having children. What are some things that you know that I think that are important to keep in mind for people who are coming out of childbirth and are trying to kind of find, I don't want to say their mojo back, but just try and find a new level of balance, because the body changes after childbirth.
It's an interesting question. I mean, that yes, obviously your body changes. You go through a lot of changes, and there's some different kind of cumulative stress. But it's more some of the other changes that certainly for me, I mean, everyone's experience is a bit different. It's more some of the other changes.
Like what? Like social changes?
But just, I mean, really time. True. You know, gone are the days where you can do things on your own time, or where you can, you know, go to bed and pretty much guarantee that you're going to get some sleep.
mean moms don't sleep?
Those days are gone. It doesn't matter how old your child is. You know, mine are now 6 and 4, nearly 5. And I still have a kid in my bed every night. So you can't guarantee that rest and recovery.
Yeah.
Which means it's very, very difficult to schedule and plan. So you can't have I can't have a planned training week. You're also, it's, you know, there's practicalities, particularly in a working family where there's 2 people working, and there's all of those different schedules to combine, and you know, there's always something last minute that changes. So I have certainly found it impossible to have a planned training. Since I've had kids, I have raced, but I haven't necessarily been able to plan the thing in. I certainly haven't raced how I would want to race. Yeah. And that's simply based around other commitments. It's that what I have found easy is the fitness. The fitness is actually the easy part.
Okay.
It's the time that's been challenging and difficult.
Do you find that you've prioritized things differently too? I mean, I have, that's
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I kind of mark my life, like pre-kids, post-kids. Because I mean, you can look at the photos of what you did before, and you're like, oh, I could go back and do that. Yeah. I could do that if I totally disregarded my kids all the time.
Yes.
And
exactly.
And there are people out there that can rationalize that. And I'm not judging at all. I know what it's like not to have my kids around. And so I know that that every moment I get, I need to maximize that, especially since, I mean, you travel, I travel, and it's like when I'm home, I want to be home. Like, you know, you go to the beach, I see when you post photos of you and the kids at the beach, and it's like, those are like, you know, yeah, you could be out doing something, training, but is it worth it? I don't know.
And I think that's it. And I think that's, you know, that's a question that everyone answers for themselves. But for me, I guess the other thing is that not only post-kids, but probably having, when you step back from the sport for a brief period of time, you get a lot of perspective that you don't have when you're fully immersed in it. When it's your job, you're racing professionally, it's very, very easy to get caught up in, you know, doing a lot of hours, doing a lot of Ks, to some extent chasing the number, not necessarily feeling, tuning into your body, but you're doing it day to day, and you can get through it and you can do it. When you don't have that luxury of time anymore, as in when you have other humans that are dependent on you, and there's other things that you just have to get done in the day, so your time to train is really limited.
Yeah.
You actually figure out that you don't need to do that much. And I have certainly found that I am right now, I'm relatively fit. If I was going to race, I'd want to spend a little bit more time training than what I actually do, because to be honest with you, I don't do that much right now, but I'm probably, 6 weeks off being pretty decently fit of training.
Interesting.
You just figure out that whether it's a combination of having a massive base, you know, years and years and years, even growing up as a kid, you have those swim training miles in, you have, you know, the running that you did as a kid, and then certainly many years of big hours training and racing triathlon as a job.
Yeah.
That doesn't go away. You don't lose all of that fitness. So it becomes kind of managing and maintaining that. And also, within that, managing, maintaining some of your body health, as in tissue health, which is the other thing that goes when you're time limited, is the little things. Some of the important little things, but the little things, your recovery and stretching and rehab stuff. And that's bitten me in the bum a few times, to be honest, in the last couple of years as well. Just not paying attention to your body like you.
You get a little complacent sometimes.
Yeah, you do. Yep. Yep.
I would imagine that also.
And that's, you know, you're running the door from a run and you're grabbing a baby and dealing with the baby and looking after the baby rather than looking after your body. But you're not also not going to change that. So.
Yeah. And I would guess that nutrition, like in having a good nutritional plan and not, you know, falling into just eating chicken McNuggets, that definitely helps keep you in the place where you can bound back, because, you know, the nutrition is such an important piece. And I know that especially for, you know, when we had our first kids, that it played such a big role, because she was essentially feeding the kids while she was breastfeeding. And then also, I mean, I've fallen into the dad thing where, I mean, tell me if you've done this, like your kids are eating and you know, like, okay, I ate my dinner, but there's like a little bit of stuff on their plate. And you just, as you're bringing it to the sink, you're like, nom, 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 nom. Oh, that's good. I'll finish off your applesauce. And next thing you know, like you're having, like that's a terrible, terrible habit that I've like had to break myself from doing.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who's ever done that. But I think that, like you said, like the nutrition has to play a big piece in that long-term kind of being able to bounce back.
Yeah, look, I think it does. But on that front, you know, I have never been one, and I don't encourage any of my athletes either to track or measure anything that they're eating. I think if you're paying attention to really good quality food and real food, that you don't have to do that. You don't have to pay attention to that level of detail. Unless, you know, you're in a weight restricted sport and you're coming into the final few weeks and you're really having to fine tune that. But on the whole, I don't eat that way. I don't encourage people to eat that way. And I think it makes all of those little extras just become irrelevant.
Yeah.
I've always eaten with my kids. It means sometimes we're having very, very early dinner, which I'm fine with. But I certainly don't have a separate dinner for the kids and then a separate dinner for adults. Maybe that's because I'm lazy. I'm not going to cook twice. But
you're such a lazy mom.
But that's certainly something that I've always done.
So. Yeah. Well, eating meals together is very important, especially from a family dynamics aspect. Anyways,
agree. Yeah.
Well, let's kind of dial the timetables back here a little bit, and let's get back more on you and some things that I want to know about you what I found out was you're not in Wikipedia. First of all, I tried to look you up on Wikipedia, and it gave me a couple of different historical figures whose nickname was Pip. And then also it tried to drive me to Liz Taylor, by the way. So I don't know what that is, but so finding information about you is outside of your website, you know, which is piptaylor.com is a little bit difficult. So I'm going to need to have you help kind of fill in some of the gaps for me here. So knowing that you've been racing for a long period of time, and you've had great success across the board in all distances, ITU, long course, how did you get involved in triathlon in the first place?
Yeah, so I grew up in Sydney, and I grew up swimming and running. We have something in Australia called Little Athletics, which you can start when you're six, I believe. I think it's under sevens. And it's a great program. It's still running. It's been running for, God, I don't know how old it is. Maybe 50 or 60 years, I guess.
Wow.
But you essentially turn up on a Saturday and you do all the events. So you do the sprints and you do long jump and throwing, discus, shot put. high jump, do the 1500. So I did that growing up, and both swimming and running, I guess I had a fair bit of success. I went to nationals, won nationals. So it was something that I really enjoyed as a kid. I got to, as a swimmer, you know, you kind of know whether you're going to make it or not by the time you're 14, 15, 16. By the time I was finishing school, I loved training. I've always been someone that loves training. So I knew that I didn't want to stop. I knew that I had some sort of athletic talent or ability. And the question was, what way do I direct this? I was still running. I loved the running. I was having a few injury issues at the time, just bony issues as I was growing. And so I went down to the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra, and I did some testing, just basic testing where you do shuttle runs and you do jump, like height jumping. You do a whole lot of hand-eye ball coordination tests. You do strength, power testing, and they give you those results. They've, over the years, tested athletes, elite athletes in various sports, and based off your results, they kind of say, well, you're best suited to these sports and stay away from doing these sports.
That's kind of nice.
And yeah. It's you know, it's a starting point. You know, they measure all your limb lengths and everything. They look at your, they predict your height, if you've still got to grow a bit more, predict your height. So, you know, someone like me, my body shape, body type, there's no point saying go and do gymnastics. you know, your genetics are just never going to support it, no matter how much I tried or how much I trained.
Yeah.
Something like that was never going to be on the cards. Either based on the test of ball sports, you know, I just don't have that hand-eye coordination. So
I said, stick to a very straight line sport.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can improve all those skills. You can improve, but some of them are innate. So you're never going to be elite at those skills. But there are others that you could be elite at. And triathlon wasn't top of the list, but it was probably the one that intrigued me the most. I had never really heard of the sport, to be honest. I think
really
all I had had, yeah, well, I mean, I'd heard of it, but not really. I didn't. The only triathlete that I semi knew was Simon Whitfield, who came to swim in our swim squad in Sydney. Yeah. And he was in a lane, you know, when I was like 13 or 14, and he had jumped in with us girls and was well behind us at that stage. So he was about the only triathlete that I knew. And then, you know, on the world stage at that time, Australia was doing very, very well. Mm-hmm. So I'd obviously heard of McKeely Jones, who's the world champ. But beyond that, no, I'd never been to a triathlon. I'd never been around triathletes beyond that. Didn't really know anything about it. But it was on the list the most intriguing, seemed the most doable. Like, oh, I can swim, I can run, riding a bike can't be that hard. you know, did it as a kid. So that was really how I got into it. I got the number for a coach and went from there.
And what time, how old were you at this point in time?
I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, 19.
So it wasn't like you came into it as like a 7-year-old and like excelled there, which is
no.
You were, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I was 19. And the first bike I got out of, we have something called the Trading Post, which in Australia, which is people selling secondhand things. So that's where I got my first bike. And within that same year, I was racing the what was then called the One Summer, the F1 racing in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
With all the other pros, I turned up. I literally had no idea. I had no idea who they were. I had no idea what I was doing. But I was racing there and really thrown in the deep end and did well enough. Keep going.
That's awesome. The F1 series has always been intrigued me. Like, it always seemed to be the proving ground for the fastest of the fast people and that style of sport, which is like, even today, I think we're still trying to grasp at how to bring back some of that intensity. And they have done that with World Triathlon. They've done that a little bit. The F1 series has always been something I was a huge, huge fan of.
Yeah, it was an amazing series, you know, and it was big here in Australia too. We would have the top internationals come and race. It was on TV. It was, I think it was even live, but it was certainly a big series. It was good money. It was really exciting racing, that short format, fast. And you're right, you know, it was really the proving ground for the top athletes at the time that came out and dominated the world circuit and the World Cup.
And I wonder if that had anything to do with the spawning ground of some of the fastest athletes that were out in that time were Australian athletes. You know, I think of the ones that were winning across the board, and especially before triathlon became an Olympic sport. And you know, Americans have always been long course driven. You know, it's not about how fast you go, it's about how far you go. And I'm like, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
But the development of speed, especially at a younger age, is so essential. And I think that idea coming from the F1 series was probably one of the pieces that made Australian triathlon so dominant. I mean, even today you go to the age group worlds, it's usually US, Britain, and Australia, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I agree. At that time, I think it was, you know, Australia's secret weapon that we had that racing over summer. And it was, you know, because even in long distance racing, you still need speed. But it also taught a lot of skills, you know, transition, where you could lose the race in a transition. And in those races, you're going through five transitions, not just the two, because you'd go swim, bike, run. Or in some cases, they'd mix it up on these events and you'd run, bike, swim, which, you know, on the face of it, doesn't sound as though it necessarily translates to a typical triathlon, but it does. It's all skills and it's all also the cognitive side in terms of tactics and being on top of things and being able to adapt. I think that adaptability was really important out of those races.
Absolutely. Do you think that it's going to translate through, especially with the new mixed relay format coming through? Because in America here, we've been doing mixed relay for about a year and a half, 2 years now, and I know that it's going to be the next format that's going to be introduced into the Olympic platform, and that does feel a lot like, you know, like a group doing an F1. And man, it's like, it is all about super speed and it's about super efficient everything, like transitions. You don't get a chance to have any sort of failure. If you do, you're almost shot out the back.
I agree. I think it's really exciting. I think it's a really exciting evolution of the sport again. You know, I think we forget the sport is still so young historically, and I think this new phase is really exciting again. It's really spectator friendly too, which is important. And you're going to see different athletes in these short fast relays at the Olympics, and you're going to see in the what we still call the Olympic distance.
Yeah.
That slightly longer event. And it is, it's exciting. And I think you'll see, the numbers and the popularity as well increase, because it becomes a lot more not achievable is not the right word, but it becomes a lot more doable to stage an event that's short as well.
I totally agree.
That's for colleges or for schools, you don't need 40 kilometers of highway. You just need a small short circuit to put on these short sharp races, and you can have races staged throughout the day that you're getting through lots of numbers in
because that way,
and it's exciting racing.
Weren't some of the F1s at one point in time running like big, large beach parking lots where you didn't really need that much space? You just raced in the parking lot.
Yeah, essentially. Yep. So that first year that I started, when it was one summer, we had a big, basically a big blow up pool. It was a 25 meter portable pool, and they'd take it round to the different cities in Australia. And set it up on the beach, usually on the beach, in a big car park, and you'd swim in this pool in heats. And then, the bike leg was only 7K, but it was always very technical. So, essentially around the car park, up back, couple of hot dogs, might be, eight or nine laps on the bike. So really short format. And then the same with the run. The run was 2K, I think. And it was up and back through chicanes, very, very short, sharp, fast, and a small area. So, it's also exciting because the crowd can pack around that area rather than it being spread out over 40 kilometers. Everyone is right there.
Yeah, those are super cool. I remember we tried to do that with USA Triathlon in Las Vegas a couple years back, where they put put a temporary pool in a parking lot behind, I think it was Caesars. I actually heard them, at one point in time, there was the idea shot around where they were going to use the fountain at Caesars Palace as the swim venue. So actually swimming in the fountain that is like the backdrop for Ocean's 11, I thought that would have been pretty epic. Even if they would have turned on the fountain as you're swimming, but apparently there were some issues with like how clean it was going to be. But they did actually do the race in Las Vegas, and I thought that was pretty cool. So it would be neat to see that whole F1 program or something like that come back in a little bit more repeatable format here in the United States, but it's been hard, And World League is definitely along that same vein. But again, I don't know that it seems like in America, it's hard for people to consume that because everybody's so long course driven, like, oh, we need to go longer, 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 longer.
Yeah. And I mean, who knows, maybe the Olympics will shift that as well. I think people will be excited by that format, that relay format. The Americans will probably do well. I think you're strong in that event, so maybe that will ignite some more interest as well.
I'm hoping it
should be, and it should be an event that's exciting, not just for the pros, but for other age groups to race. Having said that, I think it is a spectator event largely.
Oh, for sure.
In terms of having the best, the fastest, which probably is the youngest and the most elite, racing those events and it becoming essentially a spectator event, and everyone else is racing probably the longer distances.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I told people, especially when they're trying to like learn how to go faster, longer, that. Or even kids, because we put this weird emphasis on, or dramatics on, this 17-year-old kid did Ironman, or this 16-year-old kid did Ironman. Or I even read an article about this, which I think she was 13-year-old girl who was run like 8, 9 marathons. And I'm thinking, you're ruining these kids. You know, first of all, it's just, it's not good for them. You know, they don't even have their growth plates set at this point in time. And so they're just, and everybody's putting the pressure on for them to go long, and they're marginalizing their capability by saying, hey, we're going to say that the quantity or the distance that you go in, that's how we're going to judge your success, versus saying, you're young, you have the potential to do some crazy wicked speed out here. Let's have you see how fast you can go, celebrate that. And then when you get old or older or age out or, you know, hit 26, which seems to be old now in ITU racing, we're just going to have you slow down a little bit and eat a little bit more and then win everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's an interesting thing too, you know, certainly the older you get, the, you don't have quite that speed anymore. I mean, you can still have some speed, but it's not as easy. It's not, the recovery isn't as easy. And it's not as easy on your body from an injury perspective either. I've definitely found that. But as young kids coming through, I think certainly if you have ambitions to be elite and elite long term, I think keeping it short and focused is a good plan.
Absolutely, I think it becomes the right pathway for folks, and hopefully we continue down that road.
Agree. Yep.
Pip, I know that you have some other things going on, and I've got a short amount of window that I can get to hang out with you. So, first of all, before we go, you have a book out there called The Athlete's Fix. Tell us a little bit about the book, why we should go read it, and where we can find it.
Ooh, good questions. So it's actually been out a couple of years now. Really, the thinking was, I mean, it's largely my kind of philosophy that has gone into the book, and things that I have found have worked well for the athletes that I've worked with over the years. And at the time, particularly at the time when I wrote it, it was a little bit different to what else was out there. And it's essentially as well something that you can read and use as a tool to help you navigate your own nutrition plan. You know, as I said, even when I'm consulting with people, it's not about me telling people what to do. And I will rarely, if ever, write a meal plan where I'm telling someone what to eat. It's more working with you and getting information from you. And it requires you to listen and tune in to your body and what you're feeling, any symptoms, what your energy is doing, how you're recovering. And hopefully that this book is a bit of a guide through that as well, kind of stepping you through that process and helping you tune in and figuring out what foods work for you and at what time they work for you, and really getting the optimum performance, but from a optimum health basic start point. You know, I'm a big believer in having health as the platform before you can perform, which is possibly one of the aspects of sports nutrition that frustrated me over the years, and even as an athlete myself coming through, is that there was a lot of acute focus, I guess, on performance and in terms of what you're doing for that session, which is relevant, but also it needs to form part of the bigger picture. You know, you can't just think about how many carbs and calories do I need for this session, and a lot of the recommendations that I was reading or seeing or that were noticing other people were being told to do were on, you know, really, really basic food or refined food or sports foods, which is fine in some context, But when you're an athlete and a lot of your day is spent training and a lot of your week is spent training, when you look at across the week or across the month and you're consuming a lot of sports foods or you're consuming a lot of refined carbs, to me that didn't seem right from a health perspective. And it seemed very, very short-term and short-sighted. So that was the aim of the book, I guess, is to look beyond that, to look at what role your gut health plays. And we know, even since I wrote the book, gosh, what we know about gut health now is really just exploded in the last couple of years, and how critical that is for your health, for your brain, for literally every aspect of health and performance, and what you eat is plays such a crucial role in that.
Yeah, I think it's a great message, and it really goes beyond the messaging of this is what your ideal race weight should be. This is the things that you have to eat in order to be better. This does seem to be a more realistic long-term plan. And it says athlete's fix, but it feels like it's more like a person fix, you know, because everybody is an athlete to some extent. I mean, chasing down your kids makes you an athlete to some extent, but it really is healthy living long-term. And that really transcends not just sport, but everyday life.
Yeah, agree. You know, I mean, you're right, everyone. And I like to think about it in those terms as well. Everyone is, I don't know what the right word is, but everyone has to perform each day. It doesn't matter if you're performing as an athlete or if you're performing as a parent or you're simply turning up to your job, and no matter what that job is, you still have to perform.
Yep.
But you also want to feel good doing that. You know, you don't want to have a headache all day, every day. You don't want to feel as though you get to 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you have no energy and you need to sleep. And I honestly do believe that a lot of that comes back to what you're eating and some of your exercise.
Absolutely.
And it's just having a tiny bit of knowledge. And it literally is a tiny bit of knowledge, a tiny bit of common sense, putting in a little bit of effort into your planning. You know, you can't eat well if you haven't shopped well and stocked your cupboard well.
Yeah.
So that tiny bit of foresight and planning, and it just makes a huge difference. Sadly, though, I think there are a lot of people who don't know what it feels like to feel good. Hmm. They've accepted that, I'm getting a little bit older. It's normal to have stomach pains or stomach discomfort, or it's normal to have this kind of foggy brain. That's just how I am. That's just how my life is.
That's sad.
And it's incredible when you change just a couple of things and you can really change the way people live, the way people feel.
Well, I mean, I totally agree. I think that, you know, people have found the relationship between food and emotion for many years, and many times it ends up being a negative. But I think it's important to understand that it can also definitely be a positive. Eating good food, you eat well. I know that when I come home from the Olympic Training Center and I've been there for a camp, I'm like, oh, I could totally go back into racing because I've been eating like Olympic food for a week. And then it's like, no, I can't do that. But I think it's important. So the name of the book is called The Athlete's Fix, a program for finding your best foods for performance and health. And if you've not read it before, and I'm not talking to you, Pip, because I know you read it because you wrote it. But for our listeners, if they haven't read it before, go out and check it out. It's a wonderful, wonderful read, and I assure you, you will pull some really healthy nuggets out of this thing to apply to your day and your lifestyle, and help you not just as an athlete, but as a person overall. So,
yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah,
I think I need to do an update on it though.
Oh, there you go.
We'll write another one soon.
a rewrite, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean. things always change as well. Well, there's, you know, new ideas, there's new foods, new recipes.
There you
so
go.
So maybe there'll be a second edition at some point.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Until then, we'll stalk you on Instagram. We'll see all the beach photos and all the times you riding your beach cruiser out there. And maybe at some point in time, you can write a book that will allow me to understand all of the Australian terms that I don't know. That are short for something else. And that's a whole story for another time. But Pip, your website is piptaylor.com. If people want to know more about you, get in contact with you, that's a good place. Is there any place else that we can find you at?
No, I think you've covered it all. I'm semi-active on social media. I wouldn't say that I'm massively on there. But certainly contactable through there, either through my website or Instagram, as you say, which is just PipTPip. That's probably the easiest ways.
There we go. Well, I can't thank you enough for kind of meeting me again and for us getting to talk and being on the show today. It's truly been my pleasure. I look forward to seeing you somewhere, sometime. Someplace and having a nice meal and maybe an espresso or a cup of tea.
All of the above sounds great. And look, I am actually still planning on racing at some stage, so maybe it'll be back stateside. But otherwise, you should come check the beaches out.
I will definitely be there. You tell me where to be, and I will be there for sure. Well, thank you, Pip, for being here. And everybody, if you want to find more about Pip Taylor, it's piptaylor.com. The Athlete's Fix is the book. If you want to know more about what we're talking about today, Final K Sporting Services is at finalk.com. We released our shirt it's got basically Mike Ladendorf's photo on the front and Mike crushing it with some cyclocross. So if you want to represent your favorite podcast here, the shirts are online at finalk.com and our shop. Obviously, if you liked what you heard today, hit some likes and follow us on. We're now on Spotify as well as iTunes. So, on behalf of our guest Pip Taylor today, I'm Chris Swarthout, and I want to say thank you. And we look forward to you going forward and being just a little bit better.